3. You are 1,000 miles above the surface of Del Mach O, the headphone clamped against Ben Tallchief's ear declared. Switch to automatic pilot, please.
I can lander myself, Ben Tallchief said into his mic.
He gazed at the world below him, wondering at its colors. Clouds, he decided. A natural atmosphere. Well, that answers one of my many questions. He felt relaxed and confident. And then he thought of his next question. Is this a god world? And that issue sobered him. He landed without difficulty, stretched, yawned, belched, unfastened his seatbelt, stood up, awkwardly walked to the hatch, opened the hatch, then went back to the control room to shut off the still active rocket engine. While he was at it, he shut off the air supply too. That seemed to be all. He clambered down the iron steps and bounced his way clumsily onto the surface of the planet. Next to the field, a row of flat-roofed buildings, the tiny colony's interwoven installations. Several persons were moving toward his noser, evidently to greet him. He waved, enjoying the feel of the plastic leather steering gloves, that and the very great augmentation of his somatic self, which his bulky suit provided.
Hi,
a female voice called.
Hi,
Ben Tallchief said, regarding the girl. She wore a dark smock with matching pants, a general issue outfit that matched the plainness of her round, clean, freckled face.
Is this a god world?
He asked, walking leisurely toward her.
It is not a god world, the girl said, but there are some strange things out there.
She gestured toward the horizon vaguely. Smiling at him in a friendly manner, she held out her hand.
I'm Betty Jo Berm, linguist. You're either Mr. Tallchief or Mr. Morley. Everyone else is here already.
Tallchief, he said.
I'll introduce you to everyone. This elderly gentleman is Bert Kosler, our custodian.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Kosler.
Handshake.
I'm glad to meet you too,
the old man said.
This is Maggie Walsh, our theologian.
Glad to meet you, Miss Walsh.
Handshake. Pretty girl.
Glad to meet you too, Mr. Tallchief.
Ignatz Thug, Thermoplastics.
Hi there.
Overly masculine handshake. He did not like Mr. Thug.
Dr. Milton Babel, the colony's MD.
Nice to know you, Dr. Babel.
Handshake. Babel, short and wide, wore a colorful short-sleeved shirt. His face had on it a corrupt expression which was hard to penetrate.
Tony Dunkelwelt, our photographer and soil sample expert.
Nice to meet you.
Handshake.
This gentleman here is Wade Fraser, our psychologist.
A long, phony handshake with Fraser's wet, unclean fingers.
Glenn Belsner, our electronics and computer man.
Glad to meet you.
Handshake. Dry, horny, competent hand. A tall, elderly woman approached, supporting herself with a cane. She had a noble face, pale in its quality, but very fine.
Mr. Tallchief,
she said, extending a slight limp hand to Ben Tallchief.
I am Roberta Rockingham, the sociologist. It's nice to meet you. We've all been wondering and wondering about you.
Ben said,
Are you the Roberta Rockingham?
He felt himself glow with the pleasure of meeting her. Somehow he had assumed that the great old lady had died years ago. It confused him to find himself being introduced to her now.
And this, Betty Jo Berm said, is our clerk typist Susie Dumb.
Glad to know you, miss,
he paused.
Smart, the girl said,
full-breasted and wonderfully shaped.
Suzanne Smart, they think it's funny to call me Susie Dumb.
She extended her hand and they shook. Betty Jo Berm said,
Do you want to look around or just what?
Ben said,
I'd like to know the purpose of the colony. They didn't tell me.
Mr. Tallchief,
the great old sociologist said,
They didn't tell us either.
She chuckled.
We've asked everyone in turn as he arrives and no one knows. Mr. Morley, the last man to arrive, he won't know either. And then where will we be?
To Ben, the electronics maintenance man said, There's no problem. They put up a slave satellite. It's orbiting 5 times a day, and at night you can see it go past.
When the last person arrives, that'll be Morley, we are instructed to remote activate the audio tape transport aboard the satellite. And from the tape, we'll get our instructions and an explanation of what we're doing and why we're here and all the rest of that crap. Everything we want to know, except how do you make the refrige colder so the beer doesn't get warm? Yeah, maybe they'll tell us that too. A general conversation among the group of them was building up. Ben found himself drifting into it without really understanding it. At Beetlejuice 4, we had cucumbers, and we didn't grow them from moonbeams the way you hear. I've never seen him. Well, he exists. You'll see him someday. We've got a linguist, so evidently they're sentient organisms here. But so far, expeditions have been informal, not scientific. That'll change when... Nothing changes, despite Spektowski's theory of God entering history and starting time and emotion again. If you want to talk about that, talk to Miss Walsh. Theological matters don't interest me. You can say that again. Mr. Tallchief, are you part Indian? Well, I'm about 1/8 Indian. You mean the name? These buildings are built lousy. They're already ready to fall down. We can't get it warm when we need warm. We can't cool it when we need cool. You know what I think? I think this place was built to last only a very short time. Whatever the hell we're here for won't be long. Or rather, if we're here long enough, we'll have to construct new installations, right down to the electrical wiring. Some bug squeaks in the night. It'll keep you awake for the first day or so. By day, of course, I mean 24-hour period. I don't mean daylight, because it's not in the daytime that it squeaks. It's at night. Every goddamn night. You'll see. Listen, Tall Chief, don't call Susie dumb. If there's one thing she's not, it's dumb. Pretty, too. And do you notice how her... I notice, but I don't think we should discuss it. What line of work did you say you're in, Mr. Tall Chief? Pardon? You'll have to speak up. She's a little deaf. What I said was, you're frightening her. Don't stand so close to her. Can I get a cup of coffee? Ask Maggie Walsh. She'll fix one up for you. If I can get the damn pot to shut off when it's hot, it's been just boiling the coffee over and over. I don't see why our coffee pot won't work. They perfected them back in the 20th century. What's left to know that we don't know already? Think of it as being like Newton's color theory. Everything about color that could be known was known by 1800. And then Land came along with his two light source and intensity theory, and what had seemed a closed field was busted all over. You mean there may be things about self-regulating coffee pots that we don't know? That we just think we know? Something like that. And so on. He listened distantly, answered when he was spoken to, and then, all at once, fatigued, he wandered off, away from the group, toward a cluster of leathery green trees. They looked to Ben as if they constituted the primal source for the covering of psychiatrists' couches. The air smelled bad, faintly bad, as if a waste processing plant were chugging away in the vicinity. But in a couple of days I'll be used to it, he informed himself. There is something strange about these people, he said to himself. What is it? They seem so... He hunted for the word. Overly bright. Yes, that was it. Prodigies of some sort, and all of them ready to talk. And then he thought, I think they're very nervous. That must be it. Like me, they're here without knowing why. But that didn't fully explain it. He gave up then, and turned his attention outward to embrace the pompous green leather trees, the hazy sky overhead, the small nettle-like plants growing at his feet. This is a dull place, he thought. He felt swift disappointment. Not much better than the ship. The magic had already left. But Betty Jo Berm had spoken of unusual life forms beyond the perimeter of the colony, so possibly he couldn't justifiably extrapolate on the basis of this little area. He would have to go deeper, farther and farther away from the colony, which, he realized, is what they've all been doing. Because, after all, what else is there to do? At least until we receive our instructions from the satellite. I hope Morley gets here soon, he said to himself, so we can get started. A bug crawled up onto his right shoe, paused there, and then extended a miniature television camera. The lens of the camera swung so that it pointed directly at his face. Aye, he said to the bug. Retracting its camera, the bug crawled off, evidently satisfied. I wonder who or what it's probing for, he wondered. He raised his foot, fooling momentarily with the idea of crushing the bug, and then decided not to. Instead, he walked over to Betty Jo Burham and said,
"Were the monitoring bugs here when you arrived?"
"They began to show up after the buildings were erected. I think they're probably harmless."
"But you can't be sure."
"There isn't anything we can do about them anyhow. At first we killed them, but whoever made them just sent more out."
"You better trace them back to their source and see what's involved."
"Not you, Mr. Tall Chief. We. You're as much a part of this operation as anyone here. And you know just as much, and just as little, as we do. After we get our instructions, we may find that the planners of this operation want us to, or don't want us to, investigate the indigenous life forms here. We'll see. But meanwhile, what about coffee?"
"You've been here how long?"
Ben asked her as they sat at a plastic microbar sipping coffee from faintly gray plastic cups.
"Wade Fraser, our psychologist, arrived first. That was roughly 2 months ago. The rest of us have been arriving in dribs and drabs. I hope Morley comes soon. We're dying to hear what this is all about."
"You're sure Wade Fraser doesn't know?"
"Pardon?"
Betty Jo Burham blinked at him.
"He was the first one here, waiting for the rest of you. I mean, of us. Maybe this is a psychological experiment they've set up, and Fraser is running it. Without telling anyone."
"What we're afraid of," Betty Jo Burham said, "is not that. We have one vast fear, and that is this. There is no purpose to us being here, and we'll never be able to leave. Everyone came here by noser. That was mandatory. Well, a noser can land, but it can't take off. Without outside help, we'd never be able to leave here. Maybe this is a prison. We've thought of that. Maybe we've all done something, or anyhow someone thinks we've done something."
She eyed him alertly with her gray, calm eyes.
"Have you done anything, Mr. Tall Chief?" she asked.
"Well, you know how it is."
"I mean, you're not a criminal or anything."
"Not that I know of."
"You look ordinary."
"Thanks."
"I mean, you don't look like a criminal."
She rose, walked across the cramped room to a cupboard.
"How about some Seagram's VO?"
she asked.
"Fine,"
he said, pleased at the idea. As they sat drinking coffee laced with Seagram's VO Canadian whiskey, imported, Dr. Milton Babel strolled in, perceived them, and seated himself at the bar.
"This is a second-rate planet,"
he said to Ben without preamble. His dingy, shovel-like face twisted in distaste.
"It just plain is second-rate. Thanks."
He accepted his cup of coffee from Betty Jo, sipped, still showed distaste.
"What's in this?"
he demanded. Then he saw the bottle of Seagram's VO.
"Hell, that ruins coffee,"
he said angrily. He set his cup down again, his expression of distaste greater than ever.
"I think it helps,"
Betty Jo Burham said. Dr. Babel said,
"You know, it's a funny thing, all of us here together. Now see, Tall Chief, I've been here a month, and I have yet to find someone I can talk to, really talk to. Every person here is completely involved with himself and doesn't give a damn about the others. Excluding you, of course, BJ.
Betty Jo said,
"I'm not offended. It's true. I don't care about you, Babel, or any of the rest. I just want to be left alone."
She turned toward Ben.
"We have an initial curiosity when someone lands, as we had about you. But afterward, after we see the person and listen to him a little..."
She lifted her cigarette from the ashtray and inhaled its smoke silently.
"No offense meant, Mr. Tall Chief. As Babel just now said, we'll get you pretty soon and you'll be the same. I predict it. You'll talk with us for a while and then you'll withdraw into..."
She hesitated, groping the air with her right hand as if physically searching for a word, as if a word were a three-dimensional object which she could seize manually.
"Take Belsner. All he thinks about is the refrigeration unit. He has a phobia that it'll stop working, which you would gather from his panic would mean the end of us. He thinks the refrigeration unit is keeping us from..."
She gestured with her cigarette.
"Boiling away."
"But he's harmless,"
Dr. Babel said.
"Oh, we're all harmless," Betty Jo Burham said. To Ben, she said, "Do you know what I do, Mr. Tall Chief? I take pills. I'll show you." She opened her purse and brought out a pharmacy bottle.
"Look at these," she said as she handed the bottle to Ben.
"The blue ones are Stelazine, which I use as an antiemetic. You understand. I use it for that, but that isn't its basic purpose. Basically, Stelazine is a tranquilizer in doses of less than 20 milligrams a day. In greater doses, it's an anti-hallucinogenic agent, but I don't take it for that either. Now, the problem with Stelazine is that it's a vasodilator. I sometimes have trouble standing up after I've taken some. Hypostasis, I think it's called."
Babel grunted.
"So she also takes a vasoconstrictor." "That's this little white tablet," Betty Jo said, showing him the part of the bottle in which the white tablets dwelt. "It's methamphetamine. Now this green capsule is..."
"One day," Babel said, "your pills are going to hatch, and some strange birds are going to emerge."
"What an odd thing to say," Betty Jo said. "I meant they look like colored birds' eggs."
"Yes, I realize that, but it's still a strange thing to say."
Removing the lid from the bottle, she poured out a variety of pills into the palm of her hand.
"This red cap? That's, of course, pentobarbital, for sleeping. And then this yellow one, it's norpramin, which counterbalances the CNS depressive effect of the Melaril. Now this square orange tab, it's new. It has five layers on it, which time release on the so-called trickle principle. A very effective CNS stimulant. Then, she takes a central nervous system depressor," Babel broke in, "and also a CNS stimulant."
Ben said, "Wouldn't they cancel each other out?"
"One might say so, yes," Babel said.
"But they don't," Betty Jo said.
"I mean, subjectively, I can feel the difference. I know they're helping me."
"She reads the literature on them all," Babel said. "She brought a copy of the PDR with her, physician's desk reference, with lists of side effects, contraindications, dosage, when indicated, and so forth. She knows as much about her pills as I do. In fact, as much as the manufacturers know. If you show her a pill, any pill, she can tell you what it is, what it does, what..."
He belched, drew himself up higher in his chair, laughed, and then said,
"I remember a pill that had its side effects, if you took an overdose, convulsions, coma, and then death. And in the literature, right after it told about the convulsions, coma, and death, it said, maybe habit-forming, which always struck me as an anticlimax."
Again he laughed, and then pried at his nose with one hairy, dark finger.
"It's a strange world," he murmured. "Very strange."
Ben had a little more of the Seagram's VO, and had begun to fill him with a familiar warm glow. He felt himself beginning to ignore Dr. Babel and Betty Jo. He sank into the privacy of his own mind, his own being, and it was a good feeling. Tony Dunkelwelt, photographer and soil sample specialist, put his head in the door and called,
"There's another noser landing. It must be Morley."
The screen door banged shut as Dunkelwelt scuttled off. Half rising to her feet, Betty Jo said,
"We'd better go. So at last, we're finally all here."
Dr. Babel rose too.
"Come on, Babel,"
she said, and started toward the door.
"And you, Mr. Eighth Part Indian Tall Chief?"
Ben drank down the rest of his coffee and Seagram's VO and got up, dizzily. A moment later, and he was following them out the door and into the light of day.